male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. Well, one of the first things that President Trump did by way of executive order was to reinstate the Mexico City policy. This is something that had existed, well, for a long time in politics, and depending on who was president, it was instated or reinstated or taken away. It does, in effect, restrict the money that goes outside the United States to other countries to either promote or to perform abortions, considered as a good first step by many pro-lifers. The critics, of course, say that the Mexico City policy won't reduce abortions overseas, but rather increase abortions overseas. And they've got the World Health Organization and a recent study on their side, or so they say. Joining us to talk about whether or not the Mexico City policy will result in increased abortions nationwide and across the world, Dr. Michael New, visiting associate professor of economics at Ave Maria University, associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, author of a recent column for National Review Online titled World Health Organization Study on Mexico City Policy is Flawed. Dr. New, welcome to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Critics of Donald Trump's executive order reinstating the Mexico City policy say that the last time this happened under President George W. Bush, abortions increased in sub-Saharan Africa. Is that true?
I think that's pretty unlikely. People who say that are pointing to a World Health Organization study that was published in 2011. And first, I think anything from the World Health Organization ought to be handled with skepticism. That's an international body that has long favored legal abortion. So I don't always view everything that comes out of there as being all that credible. More importantly, though, when you actually get through the look in the weeds and look through the study more carefully, you notice a couple interesting things. First, critics say that with Mexico City policy, that's going to reduce access to contraception. But if you look at this World Health Organization study, contraception use actually increased amongst African women after the policy went in place. So it doesn't really follow that this policy was limiting or restricting access to contraception amongst African women. That's one thing. Secondly, the data is very incomplete. This study looked at 20 countries over 15 years. But data reporting in a lot of African countries is not that reliable. 42% of the countries in the data set didn't report data consistently. So you have a lot of missing data points there. And what data you do have doesn't look real reliable. You do see some fairly dramatic fluctuations in the data, and you just wouldn't expect that to happen. Tanzania, looks like their incidence of abortion reportedly goes up ninefold in 5 years and then falls by 95% the next year. That just doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. So, you know, I think that the data is not always reliable. A lot of the data is missing. And you look at the authors of this report, and again, it's just hard to conclude that abortions went up in Africa.
Now, one of the arguments being made in that World Health Organization report is that because contraception was not being provided for, that led to the increased abortions. Does that hold up? And how reliable or effective is contraceptive funding from the United States in the countries in question?
What's interesting, this is one issue the media does a very poor job reporting on. There's a very broad body of research showing that efforts to encourage contraception use through mandates, subsidies, distribution, these programs tend to be ineffective at best, counterproductive at worst. That's true amongst programs to give out condoms to school children. It's true amongst programs to subsidize birth control on college campuses. There's a lot of research out there which shows that efforts to encourage contraception use, again, tend to be ineffective at best, counterproductive at worst. And we see that internationally. There's studies that have looked at contraceptive availability and fertility rates overseas. And these studies, time and time again, show that fertility rates are predicted by how many children women want to have. The ability of contraception or the amount spent on contraception is not a strong predictor. So I think that that's just flawed logic to begin with. But if you buy that logic, that more contraception will equal fewer abortions, that's not what the study shows. I mean, the study, again, very clearly showed that after Mexico City policy went into effect, contraception use increased amongst African women. Again, it just doesn't follow this that this policy increased abortions in Africa. I think what you have is just better reporting over time, and that led to kind of a higher reported increase, but not an actual increase.
What do you think the actual result will be of reinstating the Mexico City policy?
I'm confident that it will reduce the incidence of abortion overseas. We've made it very clear that those international groups that do abortions or encourage abortions are no longer eligible for funding. Now, there is some evidence that perhaps other countries, you know, may increase their foreign aid, you know, based on the fact that you know, we're cutting back a bit. You know, we obviously have no control over that. But I think that as far as U.S. policy is concerned, you know, we shouldn't be subsidizing groups that perform or encourage or counsel in favor of abortion. And I think that you know, you'll definitely see abortion numbers go down overseas.
How do you respond to the arguments from those who say this is something the United States needs to be doing, especially in these underdeveloped countries? We need to be providing this kind of thing because it's a health care concern.
Well, I don't necessarily think that either abortion or contraception is consistent with good health care or good public health outcomes. You know, there's a number of countries where abortion is restricted, where health outcomes are very good. We see that in Poland. We see that in Ireland. Chile, within relatively recent years, basically took some steps to limit abortion in their country. And we saw public health increase on a variety of metrics. So, I mean, I think what helps public health is, you know, qualified doctors, sanitation, technology. There's really not much evidence that either giving out abortions or contraception really does much to improve public health.
Why do you think the World Health Organization, why, by and large, has the media accepted this as gospel truth, so to speak?
Well, it's very frustrating as a pro-life researcher that there's kind of a narrative that the media follows, that anytime a study comes out that shows that pro-life laws are ineffective or harmful, contraception programs are effective, or that abortion's safe, these studies get lots of attention from the media, lots of attention from mainstream outlets, and that coverage is very uncritical. Very rarely does a media outlet call a pro-life researcher or a pro-life academic and ask for commentary on studies based on a study like that. On the other hand, when studies come out showing that pro-life laws are effective, that contraception programs are ineffective, or that abortion can be harmful, those studies tend to get very little attention from the media, and what attention they do get tends to be very skeptical. And it's frustrating as a pro-life researcher. But I always believe that if the data backs you up, you will win. But sometimes winning can take a while. So we just keep doing our best.
What does it tell you about the next 4 years that one of the very first actions that President Trump took was to issue this executive order reinstating Mexico City?
I think that pro-lifers should be heartened by this. I think that during the campaign, we pro-lifers fairly had some questions that, unlike other past Republican presidential candidates, Donald Trump doesn't have a record of, you know, was not in office before and hence does not have a record of voting for pro-life bills or supporting pro-life initiatives. He said he was pro-life during the campaign, and this is something other pro-life presidents have done. President Reagan, it was his administration's idea to start the Mexico City policy. His predecessor, George H.W. Bush, upheld the policy, and George W. Bush reinstated the policy. So the fact that Trump did this on, or President Trump did this on his first day in office, or among his first days, I think speaks well to the fact he's committed to this issue, and we hope he'll do more things to build a culture of life.
Does it signal to you at least the possibility of his signature appearing on legislation that's already been passed by the House, defunding abortions, especially we're talking here about Planned Parenthood, but defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, right, yesterday the House passed the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act, and that was something that was very smart to do, that for many years, up since 1976, we've passed the Hyde Amendment, and that largely prevents federal Medicaid dollars from paying for abortion. And the thing was, that had to be passed every year. It was a rider on an appropriations bill, and it usually passed without much controversy, that many Democrats seemed okay with a world where abortion was legal, but it wasn't funded by taxpayers. And unfortunately, that's changed. Many Democrats, sadly, have moved to the left on this issue. for the very first time in their history, the Democratic Party adopted a platform plank that called for the repeal of the Hyde Amendment this past summer. So they've become a lot more aggressive in their support for taxpayer funding of abortion. Something we could do is, instead of passing an amendment every year, we could try to codify this into federal law. And that's what the No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion Act did. It did pass the House. I am not sure when the Senate will take it up, but I'm confident that if it arrives at President Trump's desk, he will, in fact, sign it.
So, in effect, making the Hyde Amendment permanent law.
Yes. Would... We don't have to try to pass it every year. So that's a very good policy idea.
And would that effectively eliminate the $500 million that goes to Planned Parenthood, too?
No, that would. I'm not quite sure how the wording of the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act works exactly. There's some people at the Loser Institute and SBA list who are a little more familiar with how that would explicitly, affect Planned Parenthood funding. I mean, Planned Parenthood gets funding from the U.S. government that technically isn't necessarily earmarked for abortions. But since money is fungible, it does indirectly end up paying for abortions. And I'm not sure how the pending legislation would affect that. But what I know it would do is it would effectively stop Medicaid from directly paying for abortions. And we have very good research that shows if, again, you cut off public funding, abortion numbers go down.
Is there a way to make, or would that legislation touch upon non-domestic funding for abortion, that is, funding abortion outside the U.S.?
I'm not familiar with, all the details of the way the legislation is written, but my impression is that it would stop direct taxpayer subsidies, both domestic and abroad. So no funding through Medicaid and no funding through overseas groups.
Finally, then, the American public opinion on this. What can you tell us Americans think when it comes to taxpayer dollars paying for abortions either here or abroad?
Most Americans do not want their taxpayer dollars paying for abortions. It's unfortunate. Most of the polling data we have indicates that strong majorities feel that way. I wish pollsters asked that question more often. It seems that on the incremental laws that most Americans agree with us on, polling organizations don't ask those questions as often as they probably should. But the polling data that's available show clear majorities, if not super majorities, opposed seeing their taxpayer dollars go ahead and pay for abortions. Again, the federal Hyde Amendment has been passed every year since 1976. Some states do fund abortion through their own Medicaid dollars, but with the exception of two or three states, that's due to judicial rulings. Very rarely do we see state legislators vote in favor of this. That there's some states that do that on with their own dollars, but that's, again, because of state judicial rulings. So it's a winning issue for Republicans. It's a winning issue for everybody, really. And again, I'm hoping that this bill does arrive on President Trump's desk and that he will sign it.
You have done a lot of research on abortion. When we read new studies that come out making claims about the effectiveness of funding abortion here or abroad, give us some practical advice on how to use discernment when reading or hearing about these studies.
Well, first, it's always good to look at the author. I mean, if a study comes from Guttmacher that used to be Planned Parenthood's research arm and still gets some funding from Planned Parenthood, be skeptical. If it comes from the UN or an international body like World Health Organization, be skeptical. I mean, at the Charlotte Loser Institute, we try to keep an eye on these studies. We try to have updated commentary. You can follow us on Twitter, at Loser Institute. I do my best to turn around commentary quickly. Your listeners are welcome to follow me on Twitter, Michael_J_new. If I have a new analysis out, I tweet it out right away. So, again, be skeptical of a lot of the research on this issue. That the media tries to make it appear as if there's consensus. Very often there's not. There's smart pro-lifers who disagree with these studies, and we at the Loser Institute try to do our best to get the word out.
Dr. Michael New is visiting Associate Professor of Economics at Ave Maria University, Associate Scholar at the Charlotte Loser Institute, and author of a recent column for National Review Online titled World Health Organization's Study on Mexico City Policy is Flawed. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, as well as the links to the Charlotte Loser Institute. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
We'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, getting into the gospel reading, Matthew 8, where Jesus calms the storm and the disciples ask, what kind of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? With Pastor David Peterson on the other side of the break. Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pasture can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.